Welcome to Dyslexia Unbounded at Armstrong, a series where we share how we educate and support students with dyslexia, providing tips and expertise relevant to families and educators wishing to know more. Charles Armstrong School serves students with dyslexia in grades 2-8 outside of San Francisco. Today's topic is a parent's journey with dyslexia. I'm here with a fabulous, wonderful, amazing alumni parent, former trustee, Adolfo Rydell, whose children were diagnosed with dyslexia and became Armstrong students. Adolfo will share his family's journey and advice for other parents. And with me, and with any of our listeners, educators, families, why don't you just introduce yourself and tell us about your family's journey here and your students who came through our community.
Sure. Thanks for a great intro, Brian. Our family began the dyslexia road of education when my daughter Inez was diagnosed with dyslexia. And that was a big challenge for us. At that time, she was at a private school in San Mateo. And fortunately for us, it was detected very early on that Inez had a learning difference. And we just went forward with the testing. And fortunately for us, there was a seat available at Armstrong for Inez.
Now, when it comes to dyslexia, everyone has their own moment where they realize what it is, right? For me as a teacher, I learned about it as I was being certified and I was taught, okay, this is how you may see signs in kids. But from a parent perspective, did you have misconceptions about it? Did you know what it was when you found out that was the diagnosis? Like, what was your story there when you kind of had that epiphany?
Yes, we had that epiphany, all right. And he came, one day Inez came home from school with her spelling test. And the test, she got 100%. She spelled every single word correctly. However, every single word was spelled backwards. So if you grab the mirror, you put the mirror right next to the paper, everything was spelled correctly. That was the moment for me that said, there's something amazing, because I could never spell correctly backwards and forwards. So it was amazing that she was able to do it backwards,
yeah,
but that there was something else there. And our concept of dyslexia was that you do things backwards, and that was it.
Yeah.
But we quickly learned that it was more than that, that it was not being able to retain information, not able to pull on bad information rather quickly, and especially when reading or where the child was being exposed to certain things in the classroom that she wasn't able to recollect.
Yeah. And I mean, when you get that report as a family, it can be overwhelming, right? Because you don't know like how to sift through it and you don't know how to relate to some of the language that's being stipulated in there. So I'm just curious about, like, when you got the report, were there things that surprised you? Were there things that confirmed ideas that you had about her?
So when we got the report from the person that was in charge of making the test for Inez, we also learned that she had dyscalculia. Mm-hmm. So there was an additional layer there. When we learned about the dyslexia piece, I did not believe it. And the reason why I knew that it was a little bit of a problem, but I didn't realize the depth of it. And I didn't believe it because Inez had a knack for memorizing songs in a matter of seconds, almost. Something that I couldn't do. But so when they told me that she doesn't know how to retain information, I'm like, what do you mean she doesn't know how to retain information? She's listening to songs from whatever singer, and she's belting them back on her own. So that was a shock for me. And Veronica, my wife, as well.
So when you have that like discrepancy in your mind, you're like, you know your kid, right? You're with them, you live with them, you've raised them, and it's like a big shock. What helped you realize, okay, yes, there's this great, there's all these strengths here, right? There's this great working memory or great way to see the world. We know that in research that dyslexic learners have so many strengths that they bring, especially their creativity and engineering and design. What got you to a place where you were more familiar with, like, okay, she is this, she has this, and these are her strengths, and what can we do to support her? Like, what were your next steps after that?
We were very fortunate because Veronica had connections in the community. We quickly got invited to one of the Armstrong events, and the former head of school then, Claudia Kuchitz, she spoke, and there was a guest speaker as well. And it was like an epiphany of like, that's my child. There it is. And it was quickly very evident to us that what we needed to do was to get Ines out of the school she was at, because they had sort of met the capacity. And then the next step was for Ines to be at Charles Armstrong. Similar path for Lucas as well, my second son.
So yeah, I'm curious about that. You went through this process and like realization and lots of learning about what dyslexia is with your first kid. How was that different for your second one?
For this, for Lucas, who's 4 years behind Ines, we had our radar already ready, and we started seeing some of the same patterns. And when the school contacted us and said he is also dyslexic, we were just ready to roll. There was at some point a little bit of resentment is one of the words I would say that described our feelings, because we felt that the school or teacher in particular did not do enough for either of them.
Got it.
For a split second.
Yeah.
Until more information came to us, we're like, we get it. So Lucas was a lot less of a shock, but we also learned that each of them had different strengths and different weaknesses.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It comes up because I meet with a lot of families through the admissions process, and some are in going into sixth grade or middle school there, and they feel like, oh, Ryan, we shouldn't have waited so long. Right. What recommendations do you have for families or even teachers or even peers, like anyone that's surrounding a child at such a formative ages, like recommendations if you feel like something might be amiss?
Mm-hmm. As a parent, I would say when you go to parent teacher night and the work is being displayed from all the kids in the classroom, take a look at the other kids' work. Mm-hmm. That was a big telltale for us. I saw work from kids like 1 to 2 paragraphs. Ines was 1 to 2 sentences. Mm-hmm. So that was like, okay, at that time we were like, oh, well, the teacher's not pushing her all that, but that should be something that you can rely on as a measure of where your child is as compared to other kids. And it could be the teacher is not doing enough for that child, but there's very likelihood of something else.
Yeah.
And then secondly, as a teacher, you will see that. You will definitely see that child is not going at the speed that the rest of the kids are going. And when they're doing reversals, when the B becomes a B and the D becomes a B, that is already warning. It may not necessarily be dyslexia evidently at that point, depending on this, on the age of the child.
Yeah.
But those are some signals that so require like an eye for that at that point and into the next level of the child's education in that particular school.
And that's a great kind of hack I never even thought about. When you're a family and you're going to the conferences and you're going to open houses, to kind of, without getting one-on-one attention from the teacher, you can actually observe other work. I never thought of that. That's a great point.
I'm glad your point.
I just want to go back to your daughter's strengths in terms of like her memorizing lyrics and her ability to pick up on that. When you brought her to a place where she felt supported and she was getting the right education and the right tools and techniques for her to thrive, I guess my question is, again, for families who have a similar circumstance as your daughter, and the diagnostic criteria is that these students are very bright, so they may be they're good at kind of hiding.
Right.
That they have a challenge. What is your recommendation for those families who are like, yeah, my kid's bright. They're doing all the right things, but that they're not really getting it.
Mm-hmm.
What would your advice be for those families?
Assuming that they're not here.
Yep.
First and foremost, I would say get a test done. That would be a huge indicator. The idea of the strengths and sort of not matching the child that's being reported to be in the classroom is also a telltale sign. Because as I say, they disguise it. They're able to sort of maneuver and not show the weaknesses. But when there are instances where the weaknesses just come out and they can't help it, it's really important, at least for us, it was really important to have a setting that teachers, staff, and students understood the type of child that they were. Without that, their gifts don't grow.
Yeah.
Why? Very simple. A child that is scared to go to school, afraid to go to school, in fear that they're going to be found about what their learning challenges are, is detrimental. And then knowing Ines knew and Lucas knew that they were not at the speed that everyone else was.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, feeling marginalized is really hard for kids. And especially when they're navigating all the stuff of just being a kid, right? They're navigating social networks and friends and what it's like to be a sibling or to be someone's, you know, in a family and the family dynamic. They have to navigate that. And this is like this added layer,
right?
So moving beyond like feeling marginalized, feeling welcome, right? Your students went through a program where they got support, they got that intervention, they felt empowered, they developed all this autonomy. What are some, I want you to kind of brag about some of the successes that you were able to see as they went through a program where they were able to get that stuff?
That's the magic that Armstrong brings to families like ours and future families out there. It unlocked Ines and it unlocked Lucas. When Ines came to Armstrong in the fifth grade, one of the things that we quickly realized was how happy she was to come to school. I remember her saying, "They understand." And it felt that she was in a community. She felt she was in a community that understood her. The same thing with Lucas. When he came to Armstrong in the second grade, he had a rough time because he had a lot of close friends about where he was coming from. But within, I would say, a week, he was having a blast. So it keeps out the fear, it keeps out the shame, it keeps out all of that, and the sense that I'm behind and I'm getting pulled out of classrooms because I'm not keeping up with the rest of the kids. So that in and of itself unlocks the wanting to learn, because now I'm learning in a way that I can learn.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. And then retaining. But most importantly, the gift that they all got, at least Lucas and Ines got from Armstrong, was the ability to recognize their deficiencies and then say, "I need help, and this is the type of help I need." Because when you are ashamed of your learning disability or difference, you don't seek out help.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't advocate for yourself, because it's part of the wanting to keep that hidden. Not anymore. Armstrong unlocked that. And they use that today. I talked to Ines when she worked at school right now, and she's advocating for herself. And she still had to take math for the next 2-3 years in college. And Lucas is advocating for himself, and he's just taking a certain version of Spanish at school. So it's that gift of a lifelong learner that all children should be.
Yeah, and I kind of sense that with you as like a dad or whoever is raising these children who are at these schools. And also is for you too.
Yeah.
Because like when you're in a community where everyone gets it, you don't feel like you have to explain yourself, right? It's just like, oh, and it's kind of shocking when you get into an environment where they're targeting to this brain, you're like, oh, I don't have to explain this to, you know, my learning profile. It's like, everyone just gets it here. But can you explain the, you know, those feelings? And when you transitioned to a school that was specializing in that?
Right. The sense of belonging touches on every single point of the relationship of a father or a parent with their child. And it goes from the teachers, the staff, the parents. Some of the parents are dyslexic. They get it. In our family, we have dyslexia. So it's coming home to a community that we didn't have, at least from my perspective. And all of that lends itself to growing together, growing to love the child because you don't feel disappointed about the child. You now like in a different place about who your child is, in acceptance. And I've heard many parents say, it was hard for me to accept this child that I thought was not dyslexic.
Yeah.
We were in that shoe. We were in that part of the story. And everyone comes together to support. Everyone provides insights. And it becomes just like a big community of people who have same interests. But the interest here is a child that's dyslexia and learns differently. And we all want the best for each of them.
Yeah, definitely showing up the one on this campus for sure. And going back to your hack for people who are listening or watching about the visit to like an open house, I'm just curious if you have any other like quick tidbits or hints for families who don't know how to go even get to the testing phase.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when a teacher may say, hey, this may be off, or you're at the open house and you see the work that's different, or you're like, I have a question, but they don't know what the next step is. Or they don't have the ability to even know where to start looking for testing. Do you have like a little tidbit or advice for families who are at that point in their journey?
Yes. Before I answer that question, going back to the hack.
Yeah.
What you will also see is the strengths of your child.
Mm.
And so when it came to art, UNITAS was leaps and bounds ahead of everyone. So let's not just be looking at right for the bad things or the things that are signaling that there may be dyslexia, but let's also enjoy and flourish with the great stuff that they're doing at that level, right? In terms of the testing, we did some research, who were the individuals that provided that test in the area. We found we were matched with I think it's a therapist is the title. Who does this specific test. It's a 1 day or 2 day battery that they have to go through, find a match. I mean, there are several people in the Bay Area who do that. So find somebody that matches your needs and then have a consultation with them. And it's about a 2 day test. You drop them off, you pick them up. Yeah, I think that's the best way to just say that as it relates to the step of getting a therapist to test your child, ask around, reach out to your, I would say call Armstrong. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two is call your local, you know, talk to your local, your teacher, your local school, and see what advice he or she may have.
Yeah, there's usually like an interconnected way of getting what you need. And I think also just summarizing what you said is like, just go with your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Like as a parent or someone who's in a household raising a kid and you feel like something's off, go with your gut. And your first gut might be to ask the teacher, like, what are you seeing? Or do you have a referral? And then they go a referral. That referral might have something. You just have to like go and go with your gut, right? And start that questioning.
And there's a process for public schools and Danvers. If you're in a public school system, there is a process for that. And I'm not too familiar with that process.
Yeah, there is. There's district requirements. If a teacher is sensing or you request, as a family, you're requesting that you're seeing something, they have to honor that request. So there are district routes. So it just depends on where the family is. And again, it really relates to the questions, like asking those questions and going with your gut, right? So I think that's really good advice.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for the conversation. Before we go, we have like a fun question we've been asking our guests on this newly formed podcast. We're just trying this out. So any guest that comes before, they ask a question for the following guests. So the previous guest asked, if you had a superpower, like in your everyday life, nothing like too wild, like flying or, you know, those, you know, when you do an icebreaker, it's like, what's your superpower? It's not that. It's more, I guess, I think it's more nuanced than that. And it's like in your everyday life, if you had a superpower that could help you with things, what would it be? Or what would you want to do? Like, I was thinking about this because it was tricky. It kind of shocked me. What did she ask me? Like, I love napping. And I get most of my work done from, like, I know people are going to gasp. Or maybe I'll find my people when I say this. I love working, like, 6 a.m. to, like, 11. Like, I can get so much stuff done. But I also love napping. Like, if I could possibly, like, nap while working and get stuff done, that would be my superpower. But I think that that's what I would answer. But she gave an example of what she was trying to get at.
Well, this is coming with the theme of reluctance. As parents, as I stated earlier, we were reluctant to see the children that we had for who they were at some point.
Yeah.
Very small window, but there was that. So my superpower would be to be able to go into people's minds and help them rather quickly see what is very evident.
Okay.
And not just necessarily with their children, just in everyday life. What's very evident.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see it.
Just
almost like wearing glasses.
Yeah,
see it? Now you see it.
It's like a Cliff Notes version of like what you want to keep, dwindle it down to and like see what you want to see.
No. It's more like the sky is blue.
Oh, I see. Got it. Okay.
And you're not seeing the sky there just now. And now I'm going to allow you to see that because there are some filters there.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Awesome. So now it's your job to tell me what to ask the next guest as a question.
If there was one gift that your child has that you could make happen to the fullest, what would that be?
So like if you have a student or a child and you see a gift that's really starting to create or grow, how would you like amp it up?
Yep.
I like that. I'm trying to think. I will probably answer that on my next session, but mm-hmm. That's a really good question. Yeah.
Thank you, Adolfo. Thank you so much for joining. You have given our listeners and people who are watching so much insight. And thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for sharing your story. I think it's so important because people will see themselves in your story and your journey. So it's just, I'm very grateful that you came and
absolutely
and have experience with us.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. Our experience is not unique. I think our experience has and will continue to be somewhat of the norm in a spectrum of different reactions to the situation. But we're glad to share our story. We're glad that our children were part of this story at Armstrong. We are very glad that we were a part of that story at Armstrong. And we couldn't have asked for better results for both Lucas and Ines.
So thank you.
Of course.
Nothing else for me to say there. That was a perfect wrap-up. Thank you for joining us at Dyslexia Unbounded at Armstrong.
Please catch us on any of our socials. Thank you for listening/watching or both. See you next time.